The clouds sank more heavily over the land, clenching into huge sullen towers, as Dirk, in a sudden access of alarm, had to call out the man from the garage once again. He was slower to arrive with his truck this time, and bad-tempered with drink when at last he did. He emitted a few intemperate barks of laughter at Dirk's predicament, then fumbled the bonnet of his car open, and subjected him to all kinds of muttered talk about manifolds, pumps, alternators and starlings, and resolutely would not be drawn on whether or not he was going to be able to get the thing to go again that night. Dirk was unable to get a meaningful answer, or at least an answer that meant anything to him, as to what was causing the rumpus in the alternator, what ailed the fuel pump, in what way the operation of the starter motor was being disrupted, and why the timing was off. He did at last understand that the mechanic was also claiming that a family of starlings had at some time in the past made their nest in a sensitive part of the engine's workings, and had subsequently perished horribly, taking sensitive parts of the engine with them. And at this point, Dirk began to cast about himself desperately for what to do. He noticed that the mechanic's pickup truck was standing nearby with its engine still running, and elected to make off with this instead. Being a slightly less slow and cumbersome runner than the mechanic, he was able to put this plan into operation with a minimum of difficulty. He swung out into the lane, drove off into the night, and parked 3 miles down the road. He left the van's lights on, let down its tires, and hid himself behind a tree. After about 10 minutes, his Jaguar came hurtling round the corner, passed the van, hauled itself to an abrupt halt, and reversed wildly back towards it. The mechanic threw open the door, leapt out, and hurried over to reclaim his property, leaving Dirk with the opportunity he needed to leap from behind the tree and reclaim his own. He spun his wheels pointedly, and drove off in a kind of grim triumph, still haunted, nevertheless, by anxieties to which he was unable to give a name or shape. Kate, in the meantime, had joined the dimly glowing yellow stream that led on eventually through the western suburbs of Acton and Ealing, and into the heart of London. She crawled up over the Westway flyover, and soon afterwards turned north up towards Primrose Hill, and home. She always enjoyed driving up alongside the park, and the dark night shapes of the trees soothed her, and made her long for the quietness of her bed. She found the nearest parking space she could to her front door, which was about 30 yards distant. She climbed out of the car, and carefully omitted to lock it. She never left anything of value in it, and she found that it was to her advantage if people didn't have to break anything in order to find that out. The car had been stolen twice, but on each occasion it had been found abandoned 20 yards away. She didn't go straight home, but set off instead in the opposite direction to get some milk and bin liners from the small corner shop in the next street. She agreed with the gentle-faced Pakistani who ran it that she did indeed look tired, and should have an early night. But, on the way back, she made another small diversion, to go and lean against the railings of the park, gaze into its darkness for a few minutes, and breathe in some of its cold, heavy night air. At last she started to head back towards her flat. She turned into her own road, and as she passed the first street lamp, it flickered and went out, leaving her in a small pool of darkness. That sort of thing always gives one a nasty turn. It is said that there is nothing surprising about the notion of, for instance, a person suddenly thinking about someone they haven't thought about for years, and then discovering the next day that that person has in fact just died. There are always lots of people suddenly remembering people they haven't thought about for ages, and always lots of people dying. In a population the size of, say, America, the law of averages means that this particular coincidence must happen at least 10 times a day, but it is nonetheless spooky to anyone who experiences it. By the same token, there are light bulbs burning out in street lamps all the time, and a fair few of them must go pop just as someone is passing beneath them. Even so, it still gives the person concerned a nasty turn, especially when the very next street lamp they pass under does exactly the same thing. Kate stood, rooted to the spot. If one coincidence can occur, she told herself, then another coincidence can occur. And if one coincidence happens to occur just after another coincidence, then that is just a coincidence. There was absolutely nothing to feel alarmed about in having a couple of street lamps go pop. She was in a perfectly normal, friendly street, with houses all around her, with their lights on. She looked up at the house next to her, unfortunately, just as the lights in its front window chanced to go out. This was, presumably, because the occupants happened to choose that moment to leave the room. But though it just went to show what a truly extraordinary thing coincidence can be, it did little to improve her state of mind. The rest of the street was still bathed in a dim yellow glow. It was only the few feet immediately around her that were suddenly dark. The next pool of light was just a few footsteps away in front of her. She took a deep breath, pulled herself together, and walked towards it. reaching its very center at the exact instant that it, too, extinguished itself. The occupants of the two houses she had passed on the way also happened to choose that moment to leave their front rooms, as did their neighbors on the opposite side of the street. Perhaps a popular television show had just finished. That's what it was. Everyone was getting up and turning off their TV sets and lights simultaneously, and the resulting power surge was blowing some of the street lamps, something like that. The resulting power surge was also making her blood pound a little. She moved on, trying to be calm. As soon as she got home, she'd have a look at the paper to see what the program had been that had caused three street lamps to blow. Four. She stopped and stood absolutely still under the dark lamp. More houses were darkening. What she found particularly alarming was that they darkened at the very moment she looked at them. Glance, pop. She tried it again. Glance, pop. Each one she looked at darkened instantly. Glance, pop. She realized with a sudden start of fear that she must stop herself looking at the ones that were still lit. The rationalizations she had been trying to construct were now running around inside her head, screaming to be let out, and she let them go. She tried to lock her eyes to the ground for fear of extinguishing the whole street, but she couldn't help tiny glances to see if it was working. Glance, pop. She froze her gaze down onto the narrow path forward. Most of the road was dark now. There were three remaining street lamps between her and the front door which led to her own flat. Though she kept her eyes averted, she thought she could detect on the periphery of her vision that the lights of the flat downstairs from hers were lit. Neil lived there. She couldn't remember his last name, but he was a part-time bass player and antiques dealer who used to give her decorating advice she didn't want and also stole her milk. So her relationship with him had always remained at a slightly frosty level. Just at the moment, though, she was praying that he was there to tell her what was wrong with her sofa, and that his light would not go out as her eyes wavered from the pavement in front of her, with its three remaining pools of light spaced evenly along the way she had to tread. For a moment she tried turning, and looked back the way she had come. All was darkness, shading off into the blackness of the park, which no longer calmed but menaced her, with hideously imagined thick knotted roots and treacherous dark rotting litter. Again she turned, sweeping her eyes low. Three pools of light. The street lights did not extinguish as she looked at them, only as she passed. She squeezed her eyes closed and visualized exactly where the lamp of the next street light was, above and in front of her. She raised her head and carefully opened her eyes again, staring directly into the orange glow radiating through the thick glass. It shone steadily. With her eyes locked fast on it, so that it burnt squiggles on her retina, she moved cautiously forward, step by step, exerting her will on it to stay burning as she approached. It continued to glow. She stepped forward again. It continued to glow. Again she stepped. Still it glowed. Now she was almost beneath it, craning her neck to keep it in focus. She moved forward once more, and saw the filament within the glass flicker and quickly die away, leaving an afterimage prancing madly in her eyes. She dropped her eyes now and tried looking steadily forward, but wild shapes were leaping everywhere, and she felt she was losing control. The next lamp she took a lunging run towards, and again sudden darkness enveloped her arrival. She stopped there panting and blinking, trying to calm herself again and get her vision sorted out. Looking towards the last street lamp, she thought she saw a figure standing beneath it. It was a large form, silhouetted with jumping orange shadows. Huge horns stood upon the figure's head. She stared with mad intensity into the billowing darkness, and suddenly screamed at it, "Who are you?" There was a pause, and then a deep answering voice said, "Do you have anything that can get these bits of floorboard off my back?"